This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT-Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT-Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT-Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT-Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT-Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a new natural product from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response: elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farms Elderberry with Zinc and Echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation. And zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216. Or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is an all-natural, science-based formula and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's that time of week again. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions can come to us via radio program at AOL.com. And of course, amidst the coronavirus pandemic, a lot of questions about coronavirus. And we're going to sort of ease the lockdown because, well, a lot of states are allowing people to go back into restaurants and retail stores, and even get tattoos. So if you can get a tattoo, you can ask a question that's off topic of coronavirus here on Intelligent Medicine. Right, Layla?
A tattoo, get your ears pierced.
Right.
Get your belly button pierced.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get a coronavirus tattoo. It's like, I survived coronavirus. Right. You know, something like...
Right.
With, maybe a neck tattoo. Yeah, that'd be good.
Oh, no. That's kind of gang-like, I think.
Yeah, right.
I don't
exactly.
Know.
Maybe I'll get one of those, like, tears, you know, like a coronavirus tear, you know. Usually connotes, I guess you have to kill someone to get one of those, so I'm not going to get one.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so
never mind.
So how are you doing? We're in week six of lockdown here in New York City.
Yeah.
And we're flattening the curve, no question.
Yes.
We're devastating the urban landscape because I'm pretty sure you've taken some walks and, you know, you've sadly seen a lot of padlocked stores
yeah.
that may never open up again.
Yeah.
You know, all those retail stores, restaurants, bars. Who knows where that's going to be at?
I know. I thought it's very disturbing. And the next disturbing thing is not seeing children in the playground on a beautiful spring day.
Exactly.
You know?
And,
yeah. And those beautiful sounds of children playing and laughing and all
and,
that.
And that's true. And that's actually one of the reasons why, I have family members who have young kids and, the thought was to, weather it in New York City. But once they closed the playgrounds for young kids, it made it untenable. So they had to just get out of Dodge and find, houses, outside
with outdoor space.
Yeah. So, so my summer house is now, kind of a nursery,
I'm sheltering in the city. Yeah, it's wonderful that they can go and do that,
Mm-hmm.
Here in New York, I'm in a, I don't want to say a suburb of Queens, but I'm in Queens and there's a nice front porch.
Mm-hmm.
So we could lounge out there on a nice day, get some sun, take some walks around.
Is it like Archie Bunker's neighborhood, that kind of thing?
What's that?
Is it like Archie Bunker's neighborhood? You know, like a, yeah, like a lot of row houses kind of thing?
Long Island City.
Well, Long Island City is, oh, Long Island City is actually more diverse, and it's kind of a, an up, mm-hmm. up and coming area in New York.
Yeah.
Because of its proximity to Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And it, it's a former industrial zone that's become, you know, sort of a, in some ways, kind of a millennial refuge. You know, a lot of people coming into that area. And then the thought was that Amazon was going to come into that area. And then Amazon, you know, didn't get their
deal. That got killed.
That deal got killed. And, you know, that would have been a boon to the economy there. Some people think it would have put more pressure on the infrastructure there than necessary. So anyway, so you're comfortably ensconced and you're able to go to the market. You wear a mask when you go to the market and so on.
Right. You know, I there are three grocery stores near me, Key Foods, Sea Towns, those types of places. And, you know, if I go and I see a line on one, I'll walk up to the other where mm-hmm. there may not be a line.
A line to get in.
The line may social, be way
like
shorter.
X's on the sidewalk for social distancing, right?
Yeah. That's X's, you know, duct tape, mm-hmm. tape that's put down, markers, all of that kind of thing.
I guess I'm very fortunate because as I walk around town, I sometimes see really long lines to get into, you know, supermarkets and favorite retail stores, you know, like specialty stores like Citarella.
Yeah.
You know, places like that. But that's more uptown. Where I am, my store, I've never had to wait in line. A couple of stores. I use a couple of stores, you know, because I get some things from one store and some things from another. I'm ordering some stuff online. Mm-hmm. But that's even delayed. And some of the really big stores I totally avoid. I totally avoid Whole Foods. I totally avoid Trader Joe's because those are very popular stores and invariably there's a line. And it to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to, you know, I mean, I guess we all have time on our hands, you know, just stand on the sidewalk and, you know, maybe check your cell phone while you wait 40 minutes to get into a store. But that's not my idea of shopping.
No.
I like to get in and out. Mm-hmm. You know, we're faring pretty well. I'm not, you know, cooking up the storm and things have been, you know, pretty manageable from that standpoint. Just kind of feeling kind of claustrophobic, missing my, you know, contact with patients, although we are having some phone consults.
I miss that most. Yeah.
We're going to be starting next month, in mm-hmm. case the word hasn't been passed along to you, is that we're, you know, as of, I don't know what the official word is on essential services, but I consider a medical service an essential service.
Yes.
So I'm going to be in the office towards the end of May. Mm-hmm. So they'll be making appointments for us. And, you know, it'll be different. Well, you know, maybe we'll have to wear masks, you know, wash our hands a lot, socially distance in the office. But, you know, life will resume again.
Yes. Yes. I do know of a doctor's office next door to me that is reopening in May.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know when in May, but reopening in May, which
what's
is
so
good
interesting
news.
Is the one of the premises behind the flattening the curve and the lockdown was to save the medical system from being inundated.
Yes.
And indeed, we sort of temporized on the number of people who were going to fling themselves at emergency rooms and end up on ventilators. And that seems to have worked out, even, you know, with some scary moments in some of the hospitals. And they were hard-pressed, but it wasn't like an Italy-like situation, like a total meltdown, breakdown of the...
Yeah.
But what has happened to the medical system is that the medical system's really decimated. A lot of medical practices and small hospitals that are not handling COVID-19 patients are really threatened with, existential threat to their survival because they just haven't been seeing any patients. It's down like 2/3 in some specialties, and a lot of doctors are doing telemedicine, but it's not cutting it.
It's not the same.
Yeah. So, you know, so insofar as sparing the medical profession, certain aspects have been spared, but others have been...
The economic impact remains to be seen. And I'll tell you, like, you know, the cure can't be worse.
Yeah.
But who knows what it will be.
Yeah.
And I worry about that personally. Yeah. I worry about that for
absolutely. I worry about the character of my city. You know, why we're here is because of the theater and because of, you know, the bars and restaurants that we like to frequent. Mm-hmm. And although I'm kind of a homebody, I mean, I'm not a real foodie. You know, I go out so infrequently, and I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, hanging out in bars. But I like to go to, you know, a concert. I had tickets for Billy Joel for this, actually for next week, for this weekend, I think. And uh-huh. that's been pushed off into November, and who knows if that's even going to happen at Madison Square Garden in November. I have partial season tickets for the Yankees. Of course, who knows how long before the Yankees are going to be playing again in Yankee Stadium.
You must miss sports a lot.
Have you been watching a lot
of old games on TV?
No, I don't have the heart to do it. It's sort of like a tease. You know, it's like, you know, watching pornography when you can't get the real thing. it's like sports porn. You know, it's like, I want the real thing. I want a real live game. Part of my morning routine is like to check the box scores from the night before, you know, like, you know, what, you know, I would usually know what my team's doing, but what about the other competing teams? What's happening to the standings? You know, that would be like a routine. It's like, nah, that's missing. That's not happening. Mm. And, you know, I don't think about it a lot, but it is a gap. So, and for a lot of people, and I used to listen to sports talk stations. What are you going to talk about at a sports talk station?
Yeah, what are you going to talk about? Well,
you know, it's like you talk about some trades or talk about, oh, you know what's interesting? Here's this interesting thing on sports is there's no elective surgery, right?
Yeah.
Except if you're Noah Syndergaard, or if you're Sales, who pitches for Boston Red Sox, those guys are getting their Tommy John surgeries and their, you know, MCL surgeries. ACL surgeries.
ACL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Electively, in spite of the fact that there's a general, you know, lockdown, because why? They're multi-million dollar athletes. And it's a great, if they're going to scotch the entire season, it's a great time to get surgery because you can get the surgery. You won't be able to pitch anyway. You got time for rehab. You'll play again next spring. You know, it's like if I were on the cusp about an injury as a baseball player, I'd say, I'm going to get it done now. I'm not going to, you know, like a lot of players try to play through like, oh, you know, this is an injury. I might do okay. You know, I'll tape it up. I'll stretch. It's like, no, get the surgery now, you know, because you ain't going nowhere until next spring. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And they got priority. They were able to get this, you know, but ordinary folks don't. Here's another story, true story. Hmm. You know, we did a Zoom call with some friends of ours, and it was a guy who was in excruciating pain with his knee.
Oh, no.
And he couldn't get the surgery this winter because his surgeon went skiing and injured his rotator cuff. So that canceled the surgery. So then he was supposed to get the surgery when the surgeon got better in April, but then along came coronavirus. So he couldn't get the surgery. I asked him, I said, you know, how are you doing? You know, you didn't get the surgery for your knee. I mean, your knee was so messed up. I mean, they did an MRI and they saw all these tears and, you know, all this damage. And he said, oh, my knee's fine. I said, really? He said, it was like tincture of time. You know,
healed.
It healed. The surgery that he might have had probably was sort of unnecessary because.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is often with knee problems. You know, sometimes you just have to let them go because the surgery is not going to be, you know.
And give it time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough on that subject. We're going to get to questions. But first, let's hear this important message from one of our sponsors. Here it goes. There's never been a more important time to ensure your immune system is operating at its peak. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a new natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals created exclusively to help promote a better immune response. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation, and zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. Layla, what's next?
Yeah, we've got coronavirus questions. These are very, very thoughtful. One from Diane. Dr. Hoffman, I've been listening to your podcast on COVID-19 and heard you talk about herd immunity. My question is the social distancing slowing down the prospect of achieving herd immunity, or would we need a vaccine to get to the required percentage to achieve it? And I want to juxtapose that with another very thoughtful question from Chris, which is kind of related.
Okay.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. As it may have been over a month now that most of us are sheltering in place, zero contact with the outside world, I've been hearing more and more about immune amnesia. There are some reports that without daily exposure to the public, our immune systems will forget, quote unquote, to attack the pathogens that is used for fighting on a daily basis. And a simple viral infection can wipe us out when we come back to society.
Wow.
Is there any truth to these reports?
Okay. Well, you know, there's a couple of concepts embedded in those questions. And, you know, I'll tackle the first one, which has to do with herd immunity.
That's something Sweden has done, right?
Right. Well, Sweden, I don't know if they've consciously said let her rip, but they've said that we're going to take a balanced approach to this. We recognize that there are certain vulnerable members of our society, and we're going to tell them to shelter in place and not have any contact. And these are the over 65s or people with certain medical conditions. However, children get very mild infections, and they say, we're going to keep the kids in school. We're going to maintain some social activities. I think there's going to be some social distancing. You know, clearly they're taking a different path out of this.
Yeah.
Now,
where people are a little more conscious of the distance between themselves and others and so forth.
And they're a different society. And, you know, it's possible that there's less population density, that they don't have some of the risk factors that we do for, you know, an explosive epidemic like we're having in New York City. And it remains to be seen how they're going to do. I mean, I almost feel like it depends on which news source you're reading. You know, if you're reading one source, it's like Sweden is like in meltdown. And if you read another source, it's a vindication of the idea that we never should have been in lockdown.
I've read both of those positions. So,
but the idea being is that there is this thing called herd immunity. Now, herd immunity is interesting because it's actually a mathematical formula. It depends on something called R0 or R0, and it's written with an R and a zero next to it. And what that refers to is the infectivity of a virus. And actually, Governor Cuomo, you know, like him or not, he gave a pretty good explanation of it the other day on Sunday when he did his news conference. He said, really, the goal is to take the R0 to one or less, because what that means is that for every person who gets it, if it's above one, more than one person is going to get it. But if the R0 is less than one, it means that for every person who gets it, less than one person is going to get it. Eventually, it's going to peter out. So the tipping point is one for perpetuating a pandemic. And at first, it was estimated that the R0 for coronavirus was somewhere around 2.3 or 2.4. But what's interesting is that based on one decimal point, whether it's 2.3 or 2.4, the modeling is so sensitive around that pivot point that it's a little bit like predicting the path of a hurricane when it's in the mid-Atlantic. You know, so we on the East Coast, you know, we watch apprehensively when you see, especially our people like me, property owner on the water,
right.
Summer house.
Yeah.
we watch very apprehensively when you see storms building up literally thousands of miles away. But then there's modeling, and the modeling is very, in some ways, akin to the modeling for a virus. It's like, okay, this model says that there's a chance that it's going to go to Key West, but if it takes a slight turn, very small turn in the mid-Atlantic, it might end up in Cape Cod. And that's the way the R0 is. The R0, going from 2.3 to 2.4, that's the difference between the virus infecting 10 million people or 30 million people. That's a huge difference. So it turns out that it's the R0, according to the governor, he actually had the latest statistics, is approaching one and change for urban areas like New York. Now, when it comes to herd immunity, the R0 determines the percentage of the populace that needs to achieve herd immunity. The lower the R0, the lower the percentage of the populace where you start to get herd immunity. Now, when an R0 is, you know, around 2, it takes about 80% of the population to be infected to achieve herd immunity. When the R0 comes back down to 1 and change, you start to see a benefit at maybe 40%, which actually some of these urban areas like New York may be approaching. You know, a recent study showed that New York had about 21% of the populace had been infected. And there was a study in Chicago. Maybe that was a study that was kind of skewed because the people who presented themselves for testing, you know, were sick, showed it at 40% of the population, you know. So significant double digits of the population in major urban areas have been either clearly sick or asymptomatically infected. That's another feature of this that makes it particularly hard to contain because we don't even know who's been infected.
Yeah.
Okay, so interesting fact is that the measles is highly contagious. The R0 for measles, the R0, is about 15. So that's one of the reasons why they got so freaked out that some people were bypassing the vaccine for measles, because once it's out there, it is very infectious. And when the R0 is high at 15, you need about 98% herd immunity to contain an epidemic. Okay? In other words, 98% of people have to have antibodies or have had vaccinations.
I've had.
So, okay. So now we're talking about, you know, acquired immunity and what's called amnesia. Amnesia means, you know, forgetting.
So immune amnesia,
We don't know how long, if ever, people who are been exposed to coronavirus will maintain immunity to coronavirus. So in other words, there are some reports that people re-caught it. Well, those might be mistaken testing, you know, where people tested negative, then they tested positive because there was a false negative in the test prior to the positive test. We don't really have enough track record to know how long it's going to last. So that also speaks to the antibody tests, which are the so-called immune passports that people are going to get.
Yeah.
You know, it may be that
those antibodies may wane as they do with other coronaviruses.
They may wane, or they may also be hard to interpret, shall we say. So in other words, some people may have a trace of exposure, but is that enough of a antibody response to ward off a subsequent infection? We don't know. Also, coronavirus may mutate, you know, just as with the flu. You know, just because you had the flu last year doesn't confer immunity against next year's flu. So, you know, there's a lot of ifs. So this amnesia refers to the forgetting of the immune system. Yes, there are memory cells in the immune system, the T lymphocytes, that actually may persist for a lifetime. That
because
resistance.
you don't get the same particular illness twice because of that memory.
Right. But
or it's not the same
with vaccines.
Cold virus.
The vaccine protection can fade,
but it's not the same cold virus.
Exactly. So many different rhinovirus, coronavirus, various viruses. But with vaccines, for example, we know that some vaccines confer lifelong immunity, mm-hmm. and some vaccines wane. And that's why there's a campaign now to give the pertussis vaccine to seniors because, well, we've all had the
whooping
vaccine,
cough.
The whooping cough vaccine. We all had that vaccine, but there may be a waning of our immunity. Okay. That's controversial. Getting into the weeds here. Now, so with this other, the other question that you tagged with that is more of a theoretical question. It's like, okay, well, it's kind of like the hygiene hypothesis.
You're reading my mind. I was just going to ask you, how do you reconcile that with the hygiene hypothesis, right?
In other words,
our immune system needs something to do.
If we all become germaphobes and we're swabbing everything and we never go out and we never have social contact.
And hand sanitizer until your skin is cracking, you know.
Right. Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, War of the Worlds. War of the Worlds, which was the H.G. Wells thing. I think that these all-powerful aliens who had these death rays and were, like, you know, taking over the world, all of a sudden all their machines ground to a halt because they caught the common cold, I think.
Yeah, it took them down.
Right, because they were you know, effete, and they did not have robust immune systems like humans who, you know, are like a less civilized, civilization. And, you know, anyway, so the point being, that's a point well taken. You know, I think we've already sacrificed enough in terms of the hygiene hypothesis. You know, we swab down in every surface. We prevent our kids from getting sick. And then our kids then fall prey to autoimmune disorders because their immune systems are not conditioned.
Or they develop asthma.
Yes, allergic conditions. Yes, allergic and autoimmune conditions increase when infectious diseases decrease. You know, so it's a trade-off. You know, it's in the natural course of human evolution, people got sick and there was a very high infant mortality.
Yeah.
And those, you know, the strong survived, and they survived because their immune systems adapted to the presence of a virus or a bacteria. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by completely depriving us of exposure, there may be a trade-off in terms of other aspects of health.
Yeah.
You know, so that's purely a theoretical speculation. We don't know. But, what I will say is, I'm going to just comment on something, which is I have just been bugged the last few years, as healthy as I am, is that I'll get a cold. Not usually a flu, but a cold. And just sort of a nasty lingering cold. Then I get the, you know, sinus congestion. And it's embarrassing. It kind of sounds like this on the radio, or people can tell, even though I'm faking it. And, you know, and it's been a nuisance. This year, and possibly, you know, I'm taking more immune boosting stuff. Knock wood. Not only have I not had coronavirus, to my knowledge, I've not had anything. So, but I'm also doing some other things. I'm not, you know, touching my face. I'm washing my hands repeatedly. You know, I'm wearing a mask.
Have you been swimming in a pool?
Well, that's another thing. I haven't been swimming in a pool, and maybe that's a factor in terms.
And that could be the confounder in what you're thinking may be happening, because when you swim in a pool, you know, the chlorine can be very irritating and cause some.
That absolutely could be setting me up for problems, but it's been a very interesting thing. All right. Enough speculation. Let's get to additional questions.
We have one more about coronavirus, and then in part two we can go on to some other things. So Dr. Hoffman, and this is from Freddie.
We're gonna pause
okay, yeah, so okay. In part two we're gonna, what happened to the research, what's the information on vitamin C and COVID-19 seems to have faded away.
All right, we'll talk about that. Yeah. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be right back for part two.